You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Funny how like.
Okay, the I have some music that I have kind of queued up, and I'm not sure that it's the right one, but here we go. It's not. Damn it.
Heaven, I'm in heaven.
It's supposed to be a Hollywood song. It's not even the right one. Unbelievable. Joining me is a Hollywood Marine now. Gone Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I think it's very fitting, Mike, because I am in heaven talking to you.
Ah, listen to you. Boom. Holy shit. Boom.
And the cares that
oh, my God. So we're talking about Hollywood Marines and we know Hollywood Marines as guys who go through MCRD in the Marine Corps. But in fact, there's a lot of Marines that work in the entertainment business across the country. So a little segment. And joining me is Steve. Say your last name.
Siepker.
Not Sepker. Siepker.
Mm-mm.
All right. The
No. I mean, it can't. Sure, it can be. My drill instructor, when I was Paris Island, my drill instructor was standing there, and this is at receiving, right? I'm on the yellow footprints, and
nice.
They're yelling and screaming names, right? And he's, Speaker! Speaker! And I'm not saying anything because that's not my fucking name, right? So I'm not answering up. Like, right. And he's yelling at the top of his lungs, and finally, me being a dumbass, I'm like, well, hey, sir, I think you mean Speaker. He's like, your name is whatever the fuck I say, you know? And that led to a very quick smoke session and introduction to the ways of the Marine Corps. But so you can call me whatever you want, Mike. I'm good with it.
No, Seepker's fine. I think if you have any kind of name that's not normal, like I was McNarama, right?
And that sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly, McNarama. We talked yesterday about Steve's career as a Marine, scout sniper guy, and then got out and a police officer doing all kinds of things, counter narcotics, homicide in Carlsbad, and then a door opens. For an opportunity to get involved in the entertainment business. And he kind of jumps into that. So first of all, as you got offered this, tell everybody the story about the offer to work on this project that was just an idea at the time that is heretofore been spawned as the show Shooter, a very popular show, I might add. What were your thoughts when it came to you as just an idea?
Yeah, initially, the writer John Lavin, the gentleman who developed the books into the television show, really great guy, and I sat down. It was really interesting to me because it was a completely different kind of project or anything that I'd ever been involved in. Everything I had done to that point in my life had been public service, either in the Marine Corps or in the police department. So it was an interesting opportunity for me to kind of explore being creative and actually, it's kind of having a say in things a little more and being able to collaborate on a project. So I really enjoyed it. And I found like, man, this is, I kind of really dig this. Like it's on me, you know, so it's on me to do the work and it's on me to, continue to make the connections and continue to explore this path. And that's awesome because that's one thing I know the Marine Corps has taught me. How to work hard. Like I know how to get up when I don't want to get up. I know how to put out when I don't want to put out. The Marine Corps taught me that. That's an easy day. It's like put your nose to the grindstone. Let's get to it. Right. You know, nobody wants to hear your sob story. Let's get to work.
Okay. So what was so you have that for action, and so and you have the requisite knowledge. What was the biggest challenge in terms of as this thing came to market? Is it simply the reading, and explain the process? What do you get sent? Are they storyboards? Is it a narrative? As you consult and technically advise, how does it come to you?
The process, John and I just kind of sat down and, we spoke about the books. And we spoke about, some missions that snipers may or may not do. Or in the initial book, I think it was in Point of Impact, the initial sniper shot that sets off the whole conspiracy is some 1,500-meter, like, headshot or whatever, in an urban environment. And, you know, I was just like, look, John, I mean, that's super cool and, like 1,500-meter shot, wow, wazoo, and everything like that. So, but, man, in a headshot at 1,500 meters is more luck than skill. And, I mean, you can definitely hit at 1,500 meters, but, you know, in my opinion, and I'm sure, like, there's maybe people that would disagree, but, you know, that's a dicey proposition in an urban environment in a city, a lot of crosswinds in the buildings and things like that, a lot of unknowns and all that sort of stuff. And so we just kind of talked about how we would set that up because a lot of the characters' thing is like the whole like gag is he's just this guy who can't fucking miss from like 12 miles away, no matter what. Right.
Right.
So we really like kind of dove into that a little bit and we started to talk about, all right, well, let's try and make it as realistic as possible, and let's try and make it, you know, a little more ballistically possible and make sure the reticles are right, make sure some of the weapons that are being used are correct. You know, John wanted to update the story to make, in the original book, Bob Lee Swagger's a Vietnam veteran. And in our story, we've updated him to make him a Marine Raider, MARSOC at the time. Initially, I think in the story, we've got Bob Lee being in Afghanistan right around 2010. So, the Raiders were still being called MARSOC at the time.
Right.
And, you know.
Hold on one second.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Raiders is a much cooler term though. And so
No question.
It is. You don't need to be completely loyal to the Marine Corps narrative, do you?
No question.
If it's way sexier, come on, it is Hollywood, right?
Yeah, no question. Well, and you know, the guys were wearing Raider patches, even though they weren't supposed to. As soon as they got overseas, man, they were putting those things on, you know? That's their lineage. And that's outstanding. I mean, if you go to MARSOC now in Camp Pendleton, you go aboard, the Raiders Association, give them, you know, they've got a battle flag mounted there on the quarterdeck signed by all the original, the surviving members of the Raiders Association.
How cool is that? Let me tell you, I think that's incredibly cool, you know, like MARSOC, whatever. But when you say Raiders, I mean, it, you know, Macon Island, all the things that the Raiders
did,
the history and the people that were involved in that, pretty incredible lineage. And I think whenever we link to our past, it's a good thing. So institutionally, that's a good thing, but we're not going to let that get in the way of a good story. After all, we are Marines. After all, we love
exactly,
it.
Exactly right. So we started talking a lot about that. We wanted to make sure that, I mean, the guys were wearing the proper uniforms. They were wearing proper equipment as best we could. I wanted to make sure that they were using like an M110. System, which is an air platform, which most of the guys are using. Even though at sniper school they're still learning on the M40s,
right.
Which I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, anybody that's listening, but I think they're all the way up to the A5 now. I think M40 A5, which I learned on the M40A1. So, this is like my dad's. Yeah, which is like my dad's hunting. No, it's certainly not my dad's hunting rifle, but it's pretty amazing the technology and the advances in precision marksmanship that's come about. So we wanted to at least, you know, show that, hey, there's an evolution there and this guy's on his game and that sort of thing. So, those were kind of the key points initially. And then after that, John would send me, bits of his script, which would include dialogue. And basically we kind of talk about, you know, I think a lot of times, you get military shows, and if the Marines speak in a specific way, like we have our own language, you know, and the Army has their own language. The Air Force has their own language, right?
Right.
And if you're a Marine or you're a soldier or you're an airman, I mean, you know that. Marines don't call it the DFAC or whatever, you know what I mean? It's a fucking chow hall, man. You know?
let me just tell you, I've been asked that, like, well, why don't you just do all veteran radio?
And right.
I'd say, who the fuck wants to listen to that?
Yeah, right? Exactly, right?
Right, but well, why don't you talk about, like, I want to hang out with my tribe, man. My tribe doesn't
right.
speak that language. We're different.
Right.
And so are their tribes. They don't want to hear. Do you think Air Force guys want to hear Marines talk shit? No.
No. Because that's all we're going to do.
You know. And they know we're right.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. And they don't like yep. it. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
I got an email for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. Yes. I'm enjoying the conversation, especially about the effective ranges with firearms. Is Steve one of those guys who promotes the 200-yard pistol shot on the run, one shot, one kill? Or does he try to inject some sanity into there's no safer human being than somebody on the run at 25 yards when somebody's shooting a pistol?
I think that's a great email, by the way. That is the challenge. I will say challenge. There's no problem. Just challenges, man.
Sure. Sure.
Working in the entertainment business because, you know, they say initially art imitates life.
Yeah.
But I think with the internet and with how much social media is out there and YouTube and this, I mean, we've gotten to the point where life now imitates art. You know what I mean? So if you've seen it in a video or a movie before, there's like this assumption that that's actually real and actually can be done. I don't promote the 200-yard pistol shot, one shot, one kill.
Okay.
I've shot a .45 pistol at 50 yards and hit steel, and that's a challenging shot. And I was standing still, and the piece of steel was standing still, and nobody was shooting at me. And I got to say, I hit the fucker. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I hit it. But I missed it a couple times, you know?
Right. No, you know, when you go shooting with people and you talk about that, and they look at you like,
yeah.
What? Yeah, like, that's impossible. That does not happen. Like, what do you mean? Okay, well, look, I remember I took, when I was teaching my sons to shoot pistol. We're up in North Dakota, so we go out into farmland, and every kind of county or, you know, every area has got a place where guys shoot. Because they come out of the womb with a shotgun in their hand and a fishing reel in another hand up there. And, it's their birthright. So there's, you know, there will be a plot of land and it tends to be lower land with either berms on the sides that are natural and there's dryers and all kinds of nonsense in there. And you go there and shoot. So I take my two sons down there. I buy a couple of watermelons and I say, okay, we're gonna pistol shoot. So we shoot. And I said, okay, now here's what we're gonna do. You're gonna take off with a pistol. You're gonna dive over that. You're gonna hit and then you're gonna roll quick. And then within stopping the roll, you're gonna shoot that thing and you gotta shoot within 2 seconds. Right?
Right now.
Okay. And then you're gonna stand up and you're gonna run towards that watermelon and you're gonna shoot it. And my sons looked at me and they said, but we only have two watermelons. And I said, you menses don't need to worry about that.
Yes.
Right? So the watermelon is going to be the safest thing that's out here. We went about six iterations of that, and they would come back and look at me like,
there's something wrong with your pistol,
Is a sight on the new? That would be okay.
Yeah.
But it is funny. Hold on, another email. Hey, Mac, what about the hand grenades? Where do they get the napalm shot to come out of that hand grenade? How do they do that? So talk to me about hand grenades. I've seen more dust than fire come out of a hand grenade. How do they get fire to come out of it?
That's like the biggest buzzkill when you see like a real grenade go off. You're like, what the fuck is that? That's some bullshit.
Where's the nape shot?
Like that fucking vehicle didn't even flip over at all. That's bullshit.
Right.
Who's making these things? The way they do that, I don't know the exact process. I've seen them put those charges together.
Right.
And the guys that come out and do that kind of stuff, or Master Blaster, they have their Master Blaster cards and all that kind of stuff. They do a great job, like really, do a great job to keep everybody safe. But, they add some sort of like small container or almost like a water charge. Like a lot of those charges, they will dig a hole in the ground and they put, kind of like this welded cone into the ground, this steel welded steel cone into the ground to shape the charge so that all the blast and debris goes directly up, in the air rather than out.
Right.
And they'll add a little gas to that charge.
Yeah, baby.
You know, almost like if you did a water charge to breach a door, you know, like with some Detcord cord and an IV bag or something.
Right.
They'll add like a little bladder of gas and you'll get that flash and that smoke and the flame. And that's kind of where, like, you know, once the show started airing and things and, you know, we started getting all the internet trolls and the haters and all that kind of stuff on there. That's the kind of stuff, you know, you just be like, look, dude, you know,
it's Hollywood.
I had a director tell me, you know, cause you get into these, creative conversations with directors and the writers and things like that. And as a consultant, I'm consulting, you know what I mean? And
so let's talk about that.
They're going to do
it. They're not from our tribe.
Right.
And
that's true.
And
that
so they're creative, money making kind of people. And so as a consultant, your job isn't to throw a wet blanket over it and go, yeah, that's not how it would go, fellas.
Exactly.
If you want to continue to work in that business, yes?
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think that's one of the things you can, at least in my experience, like you feel that very early on when you first show up. They're like, oh, is this going to be one of those guys or is it going to be, you know what I mean? Is this guy going to be throwing a temper tantrum every time we try and do something? Because, you know, the directors have a very specific, they know how to shoot stuff and they're looking for a specific shot or a specific look. And, you know, I feel fortunate that I had the police experience and the detective experience, all the interviewing and interrogating and that kind of stuff, because it just really sharpened up my communication skills and my ability to kind of read people on whether they were uncomfortable with what I was saying or they, you know, what was their body language saying that their words were not saying. So you figure out how to maneuver and operate in that environment. And at the end of the day, you know, I had a director tell me, one time I said, hey, there was a shot there. We had a rifle and it was on a bench rest in a workshop. And, they wanted to do this thing of like, hey, we're going to have him working on his scope. And we didn't have torque wrenches, right?
Right.
To mount the scope. And I said, well, like, the scope's already mounted on the rifle. Let's think of something else to do other than, like, don't fiddle with the scope. Like, we don't have the right tools, and it's good. People are going to know, and people are going to hate it. Some people won't notice it, but, like, people that know are going to know. And the very short reply was, no, he needs to be, I want him to be doing something with it, and we're not making a fucking documentary.
Okay, that makes sense.
Roger that.
So do you have like a following of haters that watch it for, you know, specific realism and just Seeker, again, you failed us, you clown. What are you doing? Do you have those?
Yeah, you know.
Are the haters among us out there?
I'm sure there are. I know that there were some comments, initially. On that specific scene about the torque wrench thing that people lost their minds about. People are also very, in the long range shooting world and things like that, people are very attached to their caliber,
right. Their
way of doing things and that kind of stuff.
Do you try to remind them that this is a TV show?
You know what? Honestly, Mike, I read a few of the comments. That were kind of shitty comments and everything.
Right.
And I was like, am I going to go down this rabbit hole?
No.
And I was like, no, I'm not going down this rabbit hole. Because at the end of the day.
Why? We want to talk about this shit. And we want to tell you what a dumbass you are.
Yeah, you know, I mean.
Who needs
you know,
it, right?
And there are some things in there that, there were a couple comments. I don't even remember the comments. I wish I'd printed them out, but, that people pointed out, and I was like, no, hey man, that's, you know, absolutely, that's a straight bust on my part for, you know, for sure, blah, 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 blah. And then there were other comments on there were like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but like, we couldn't buy that. We didn't have the time for that. We didn't have the budget for that. We can't ship, you know, this and that. And, I think a lot of the comments are, sometimes come from, a place of like, hey, I don't really care about what's on the show. Like, I just want to demonstrate to the internet community that I know a little bit about shooting.
Yeah, we don't need that. I got an answer for you relative to the M40A6885. On July 25th, 2013, the Marine Corps released a solicitation for the M40 modular stock program. Upgraded features are to include a folding stock compatible with the current M40 actions and barrel to make the rifle more compact for transportation inside confined spaces like vehicles, and a full-length rail to accommodate optics and accessories. The M40A5 has only a few inches of rail space beyond the scope for night vision optics, so extending the rail length would allow for more accessories to be attached, enabling snipers to put rounds on target under any conditions. Deliveries were to begin 3 months after the contract was awarded, with 1,100 stocks to be purchased as part of an upgrade. That became known as the M40A6. Remington has awarded the contract, a contract in November of 2014. The final product with those rails will be designated the M40A7, which is built from the ground up like that. Planned to be fielded in 2017. The M40A6 was fielded by the Marine Corps in June of 2016. So there you have it. All you gun assholes out there. Boom. That's right. And you know, and they know who they are too, because they can quote it, right? Verse exactly. And all exactly. of that.
Exactly. But here's what I will throw out for anybody that doesn't know. Some new interesting stuff. I don't know if it's been awarded yet or not, but SOCOM's going to 260 Remington, for their long range sniping, round. They're going away and they're going to do it out of an AR platform. They're going away from their, you know, cause, you know, obviously ours is the M40 is a 308 platform. Then, some SOCOM units were using 300 Win Mag.
There was
the 338 Lapua stuff out there. But now they're going 260 Remington, which would be real interesting. I haven't shot 260. I'm going to shoot 260 Remington in March. I'm going out to For any of you guys out there who have been around the Force Recon community, MARSOC community, Raider community, you'll know Buck Doyle. Buck, I first met Buck in like 1992. Buck was Alpha Company 1-4.
Yeah.
Before he made the jump to Force Recon. And that dude is, I think everyone will agree, he's just a legend, period, with a capital L. He's got a great range out in Utah, and he's got a consulting business, called Follow Through Consulting. And, man, I'll tell you, you go out there and shoot steel out there in the Utah, in the Capitol Reef area.
Right.
We're shooting steel, shooting stuff out to a mile, anywhere from CQB distances all the way out to a mile. And,
so it can be done.
And it's just good times, brother.
All right, hold on 1 second. This is my guest today, Stephen Siebker. Okay,
there you go, you got it.
He's a technical advisor on the program Shooter. Here you go. Check out the music.
My name is Steve Siebker. I'm the technical advisor for USA Network's TV series Shooter.
Yeah. Look at that!
First Battalion, 4th Marine Scout Sniper Platoon is where I had done my Marine Corps service. I was also a police officer for quite some time and finished up as a homicide detective. The showrunner was looking for some help with the script as far as technical language with firearms and long-range shooting.
Modified Saber Forced.
Obviously.
All right, what's it like to work with these guys? What's it like to work with actors who really, they're from a different tribe too? And does the group of actors that you're with, do they warm to this stuff pretty, I would hope they'd need to warm to it pretty quick, and I would think would be anxious to work with you and learn from you. What's that like, working with actors who may or may not, and actresses who may or may not have a firearms background?
Yeah, no, that was fantastic. But that was, what I will say is, it was initially the source of most of my anxiety about the whole damn thing.
Really?
Before I met any of these guys, because I thought, geez, oh man, like, you know, I don't know anything about these Hollywood guys, and I'm not a Hollywood guy, I'm just some dude, and like, you know, how's this gonna be? Are they gonna have egos, and is it going to be this whole drama thing or whatever?
Can I slap them around? Will they take it?
Yeah.
Are they as tough as high school? Like, yeah. Are they as tough as high school football players in Vista?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And what I will say is that Ryan Phillippe was the first guy that I met. He and I did a day on the range out in Riverside. Had a whole bunch, you know, we had an M40, I want to say the M40 was like, it was an A3, I think.
Yeah.
Had an M40 A3, had an M110, had some pistols. I brought some of my pistols. I brought my M4 set up and, you know, kind of, you know, started it off pretty formally, like, hey, you know, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. Your terminal learning objectives will be, you know, some shit like that. And Ryan was really, he's like, look, dude, I've been around the movie business for a long time. I've done a lot of military movies. I've got some weapons background and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm a pretty athletic guy and that sort of thing. I said, okay, all right. Well, you know, meanwhile, I'm thinking, okay, fucker, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, Mr. Make Believe and Pretend. Let's see what you got.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I got to tell you, man, the dude can get down. So it was cool. He took to it pretty quickly. Some of the weapon systems he was somewhat familiar with and some he wasn't that familiar with.
Right.
But he took to it pretty quickly. Like, he's a really athletic dude. He's a black belt in Taekwondo. And,
love that.
I took him to a buddy of mine owns a martial arts studio, up in LA. We took him to kind of rehearse some fight scenes and do some sparring and stuff like that. And the dude can throw down, man. So, that was cool. It was like, okay, man, he's like, cool, man. Like, he'll put in work and, we're going to get after it, and it's going to be good. And really quickly, like, it was almost like we kind of were training each other in a sense. Like, he was training me in the ways of Hollywood and kind of putting me at ease in my new role. And I was just giving him some pointers and getting him kind of sharpening up the edge again. Omar Epps I've worked with as well. And Omar, again, just gracious guy, man, like super, super professional guy, just all about business. And hey, man, how do we make this thing look as good as possible and as realistic as possible? I think the most fun I had was probably with Cynthia Adai Robinson, who plays the Nadine character. She'd never touched a firearm in her life. So that was fun for me because it was really interesting. Like, she was all ears, like super great, super coachable, as they all were.
Right.
It's just funny, like the first time I just took her out to shoot a Glock, was the first firearm that we had her shooting. And that was her FBI, quote unquote, FBI sidearm. So I had her with a Glock 19, and, you'd have thought I handed her a live rattlesnake, you know? But she got the hang of it. And then next thing you know, like, I think episode 7 or 8 or something like that, she's shooting an AR. I mean, and running and gunning a little bit. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All right. Another email for you. Mac, first of all, what network is the show on? And two, is there some kind of reservoir in Hollywood that they draw uniforms, vehicles, weapons from? A private business that's in that business? Where does all this stuff come from that I see different shows using?
Okay, two very good questions.
What network?
The show is on USA Network.
Okay.
We finished our run of season one already, but you can see it on demand. And our season two, right now, I don't have a firm date on when that's supposed to air, but my understanding is they're going to try and air season two in July.
Okay.
I believe. And I'm hoping nobody from the studio will punch me in the face for saying that. But I believe it's going to be in July. So
okay.
I know we're working on the scripts right now. So and looking forward to that. As to the second question, there are several prop houses in L.A. and I'm sure in several of the different states that do productions. Atlanta's real big right now. Canada's huge. New York, obviously, and that sort of thing. Louisiana. But these houses have loads of, you can go up to, ISS, is a prop shop up in LA that we used. And I'll tell you right now, I walked into their armory and I can honestly say I don't know if there is a firearm that they do not have. And if they don't have it, they can order it. They have all the licenses and permits to order it, machine guns, you name it, silencers, suppressors, what have you. And if they can't order it and they can't get it, their armorers up there can make it. It's a pretty impressive shop up there. But in addition to the armory, they've got warehouses filled with uniforms, with helmets and plate carriers and comm equipment. You name it, police uniforms, that sort of stuff. All over the place up there. As far as vehicles, I know they're, I don't know exactly, usually most, at least in the television production that I'm involved in, they have a guy who runs picture cars, which is any vehicle that's going to be on screen. And our guy was Ryan, and basically he's in charge of sourcing any vehicle that we're going to put on screen, up to including, I think we had like an MRAP on camera last time. But it was all blacked out. It was like we made it an FBI MRAP. But
what a joke.
Yeah, so I don't know where he sourced it. He sourced it from an individual who owns one or two of them and rents them out for pictures specifically. So
okay, my guest, Steve Siepker here for a few more minutes. Steve, another email. Hey Mac, pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. A little glimpse into Hollywood. Don't know that I've ever heard anybody interviewed like this before, so it's pretty interesting. Bottom line, does Steve enjoy it? And I think we all know it's a business like any other. It has to be successful. So I think we all need to keep in mind that these shows are based on stories of true events. And then they've got to sell. And so they've got to be sexy. So I get it.
Right.
Does he enjoy it?
You know what? I do enjoy it. I got to tell you, from the first experience I had was in Vancouver when we filmed the pilot, and those were the first crews that I interacted with, the props guys and, you know, the art department and all that kind of stuff. So that was my first kind of step into the business. And that entire crew on that pilot was fantastic. I mean, they really took me under their wing and were like, hey, you know, very welcoming and kind of taught me the ropes a little bit, and kind of the hierarchy and the politics and things like that. And I found the same thing when we moved the show to LA to film the first season. Man, our last crew was like a family. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. It's like a traveling circus, right?
Right.
And it moves much like the military, man. I mean, you have your transportation department moving around trailers every single day. We've got, you know, chow every day, so you've got caterers moving to and from sets and to and from locations and stuff like that. And I mean, everybody doing their little, you know, bit, you know, like the Arlene Ermey line from Full Metal Jacket, you know, when the machine breaks down, we break down. It's the same thing in production. So, yeah, it's been a blast. And to that emailer's first point, You're spot on with that. I mean, these stories are exactly that. They're stories, and the object of the game is to, at least from my standpoint, my philosophy is, you know, we aren't making a documentary,
right?
But I want to be able to at least interject as much realism as I possibly can, at least in the forms of movement, tactics, and language, and equipment, and that sort of thing, so that the viewer will, you know, because like when I watch movies, it's like, look, and hey, it's a movie, it's a TV show, like I get it, right?
Right.
But if there's like these glaring things,
that's stupid. It loses its credibility.
Stupid.
So is that there? Is that there, Steve? Is that so? When they approach it, first of all, they hire you, so they are concerned with that. It has enough. Is it enough realism to make it legit? And then from there, I tell the story. And is that how they do it?
Yeah, absolutely. John Lavin, who's a fantastic showrunner, and John and I have become good friends, and I. At least I think so, John, if you're out there listening. But yeah, I mean, John's concerned about that. I mean, John cares about the veteran community and whether or not it resonates. He doesn't want it to be douchebaggery,
right.
You know. And having said that.
And that's everybody. See, this is the beauty of All Marine Radio. You don't have to footnote douchebaggery.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right.
What an awesome, thing.
Everybody knows what that is.
Exactly. Douchebaggery.
We're all speaking the same language.
Exactly.
We're all speaking the same language.
That's the beauty.
But, you know, having said that, I mean, John's working with a budget.
Right.
He's also working with directors and other writers, and he's also working for the studio execs. So, and all of those people have input into the final product. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, you'll get criticisms or you'll hear stuff from, trolls or internet folks or whatever and be like, hey man, you have no idea what was going on that day, and you have no idea what we tried to do, but we got shot down on, or this and that, for a number of different reasons. So, you know, you do the best you can, you work as hard as you can, and you try and do, you know, bring as much of that realism to the screen as possible. And again, you know, we only have 45 minutes to do that in.
Right.
Because 15 minutes of that hour is commercial.
Right.
So you're moving really quickly, and trying to get that stuff done, you know, but, you know, I took, Ryan out to MARSOC, or Raiders, in Camp Pendleton. We went out there, we did some shooting, toward the command a little bit. And it's important to the guys and to Ryan specifically, to do as much justice to a guy who has those skills, as possible. You know, I mean, it's not, if we're going to make him a Raider, then it's not just long distance shooting. I mean, a critical skills operator can have that sniper school, certainly. But also has a myriad of other skills. And I think, there's also a misconception about what that job, what sniping is all about. I mean, the shot is a very small part of the job, you know. A lot of it's reconnaissance or surveillance, you know, that SR mission, you know. And then you guys, your fancy airplanes flying the fuck in to save the day, blowing shit up.
We all know that's fiction. We all know that's fiction.
Yeah.
We all know that because three quarters of them can't get in the air, for Christ's sake.
Right, exactly. I was just, yeah.
Yeah, that's a horrible, no, you know, yeah. That, sadly, that's not fiction. That's the truth. That sucks, man.
I know. I read that.
70 out of 280 F-18s can get in the air. I mean, it's 60% of the aviation inventory can't get in the air right now. It is crazy. All right, Steve, first of all, Corporal Musselman's got waiting to come on, so he's yelling at me.
Oh, shit.
We're going to have to get, hey, you're going to have to come back on with he and I one day. And,
I would like that.
Yeah, he asked me, are you still wearing your round glasses?
Fuck no, man. I got my eyes lasered. I got that shit lasered.
What's up with wearing round glasses? Were you like John Lennon or something in the Marine Corps?
No. Those were the Joker style glasses. I don't think Mike Musselman would even recognize my picture.
He remembered your glasses though.
I bet he did.
just like you remembered his Camaro.
I did. Fuck yeah. Great. Oh, you know what? Before you kick me off here, I don't know who we talked about
right.
it yesterday off
right.
here, but
and I
who
sent an
the listener was
I sent him an email last night just so you know.
Yeah. Who I just wanted to encourage that listener, whoever that was from yesterday that emailed in that expressed interest in the entertainment industry. And wanted to kind of know how to kind of like whatever route to go and how to get into that, to email Mike, email All Marine Radio, and he could put you in contact with me and we could talk about it and kind of hone down. It was kind of a hard question to ask.
Right.
I didn't really have a specific, you weren't very specific about exactly what vein of the entertainment business you wanted to get into, but, we can talk about that off the air and hopefully I can help you out and maybe link you up with some folks. So.
Okay. All right.
Do that.
All right. Well, look, I'll shoot you a text and we'll get you and the gunner on together and, we'll have a good time with that. But, I hope you don't mind, being our, Hollywood expert. Do you?
Oh, no, not at all, man. Anytime. Give me a call.
Yeah. Tell him, hey, in addition to all that, I'm the official All Marine Radio Hollywood correspondent. So,
perfect.
So, hey,
I liked it.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
No, man, awesome stuff. Thanks for the visit, and we'll you, me, and the gunner will get on, and you guys can tell stories about each other, and I will referee. Okay. And
yeah.
And at some point, we'll get the ground truth about the Camaro and about the John Lennon glasses.
Exactly. That sounds great, man. All right. Give my best to the gunner, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bud. Thanks for the visit. Steve Siepker. He is a former scout sniper, infantryman in the Marine Corps, and former Carlsbad police officer, and currently doing technical advising for the show Shooter that's on the USA Network. We're going to take about a 60-second break. Be back with the gunner next here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.